Welcome to Politics on the Prairies. In today's episode, I'm speaking with a member of the Rainforest Flying Squad. The Rainforest Flying Squad is the movement working to protect Canada's remaining old-growth forests. My guest, Kathy Code, has her Master's of Environment and Management and serves as the Vice Chair on the Ecoforestry Institute and Society, which owns the Wildwood Ecoforest. But that's not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is what's happening at Fairy Creek, BC, where the Rainforest Flying Squad has set up a barricade to prevent access to the area that's slated to be logged. You probably heard something about this, but we're going to take you inside to hear from one of the members who can tell you what you can do to help if you're mobile beyond just sharing this podcast or writing the Premier. Look for the Premier's email in the bottom of these show notes. Everyone, thanks for showing up today, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello.
Hi, Ryan. Sorry about that. I lost the meeting because I went out of it, and then I couldn't find it in all the tabs that I have open, so sorry about that.
That's fine. That's fine.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and yourself?
Oh, good. Good. It's been a pretty hectic time this past week.
Yeah.
Today I actually got some gardening in and some shopping done. I just needed to get away and get out and go do something different for a change.
Okay. And have you been at the creek? How do you say it, by the way?
Fairy Creek.
Fairy Creek, okay.
There's a number of camps, actually. Fairy Creek is on one side of the TFL 46, and then KQ's is another campsite that's on the other side, about 2 hours away. So, and then there's a number of camps that we've set up in between. So we have a number of locations that we are setting up camps so that the industry can't come in and chop down the old growth.
Gotcha. Yeah, so for people listening, I'm here with Kathy. And Kathy, you can find her posts on the Rainforest Flying Squad's Facebook page, which is where I found Kathy and how we connected today. Kathy, could you tell me what your association with the movement at the Fairy Creek is?
Yeah, certainly. I was asked to join in late August 2020 to set up the legal team. I'm not a lawyer, but what I did was I looked for the lawyers, I looked for the funding, I looked for the legal strategies and the information that our lawyers would need then to move forward. And so it's been a pretty hectic time trying to deal with all the legal strategies of this.
Okay.
I'm also one of the three named clients in the injunction. So, and I'm also on the media team. So, sort of serve multiple positions and help out where I can.
Okay. And so the movement being basically a group of people such as yourself who are attempting to prevent logging happening of the old growth forest in Victoria, BC?
No, it's not in Victoria, actually. It's how would I describe it? It's sort of in the Lake Cowichan area, so it's north of Victoria.
Okay.
Several hours north of Victoria would be in the back mountains there where industry has been granted a very large, what they call a tree farm license. Mm. It's tens of thousands of hectares, and they have been given the right, Teal Jones has been given the right by the BC NDP government to log the area, which contains some old growth, but a lot more second growth. So we're not stopping them from harvesting the second growth. We're not anti-logging. What we are doing is protecting some 200 hectares of old growth forest. And while that doesn't sound like very much, it is, it's down, we're down to the last less than 3% of the old growth forest left. And this is the last sanctuary for all the biodiversity and wildlife that live within the forest. And once those forests are clear cut, they are gone forever. We have cedar trees that are 2,000 years old. They're very valuable to industry, several hundred thousand dollars a piece. But once they're gone, they're gone. We will never see them again.
Wow. So you're saying that each of these trees are worth several hundred thousand dollars a piece?
They can be, yeah.
Wow. And so I can see the incentive for industry to be after them then in that case.
Oh, definitely. That's where the money is. And I think there is an issue actually with the second growth tree plantations. I think that they're not as far along as government and industry would like to be in terms of being a viable fiber product. Government and industry tend to think of forests in terms of fiber. It's standing fiber. They're not trees, they're not forests, they're not wildlife habitat. They are simply a resource to be used and clear cut.
Wow. Okay, so I sort of understand your movement. Now, when you said there's multiple locations, how is that there's multiple locations that are these multiple entrances to the area that's being logged?
Yeah, in the hills back there, there are old growth forests in the valley bottoms and up on the mountain ridges now that haven't been cut. They're getting down to the last remnants. So they're kind of scarce and they're scattered all over the place. So we make an effort every time we learn that another cut block has been approved. We find out what kind of cut block, what kind of trees are involved in that cut block. And if we find that there's old growth in there, we go in and try to protect it. Hence the name of our movement is called the Rainforest Flying Squad. We've evolved over time from the Ferry Creek blockade to the Rainforest Flying Squad because now we have that mobile capacity to swoop in there when we see that loggers are headed for the old growth, and we can set up defenses then to stop them.
That's very cool. So you make it sound like there is a large group of you at this point.
Oh, there's hundreds of us, hundreds and hundreds of us.
Awesome.
And we have, oh, I think our donors number, 4,500 now. So we're a very strong movement, and we're being joined by more people every day as people come to understand how important this last bit of old growth is, and that if we want to save it now for both the indigenous tradition and culture and for our children and for all of the issues that are wrapped up in this, then we need to do that now.
On behalf of the listeners of this podcast, we thank you for that. May I ask, Kathy, in your own words, could you explain the importance of the forest that you're protecting now, or specifically the parts of the forest that you're protecting now?
Certainly. The majority of the forest that we're protecting lies in unceded Pachadat territory. This has been their traditional territory for millennia. And Elder Bill Jones, who is sort of our guide and mentor for this movement, regards Ferry Creek specifically as his cathedral, his place of worship and spirituality and meditation, and a place that's sacred for him and his family. To lose that now would be quite crushing. We are supposed to be in the throes of reconciliation and truth. And if all we can do is cut down the old growth forest, which is the traditional territory of our First Nations people, then that really doesn't say much about our honesty in addressing truth and reconciliation.
Hmm. So, Go ahead.
Sorry. There's. I think this movement has evolved, and as we've gone along, we've evolved our thinking about what was originally the intent to save the old growth now has become a movement then to recognize and respect First Nations sovereignty and their rights and title to their unceded land. It also involves then climate change and the carbon storage and sequestration that old growth mature forests offer us. It's also saving the biodiversity. We're losing biodiversity at a horrendous rate. Mm-hmm. And I think we're paying for that now in terms of COVID. That's a result of that. You know, and we've also come to discover then and have more understanding of the social and economic injustices that come about then with forestry and the way that it is practiced and the way that industry and government then are in partnership hand in hand to make sure that they can grab every last dollar out of the industry at the expense of the public interest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So your reasoning goes beyond mere biodiversity, but to the cultural aspect of this is someone's land that's cherished currently, and it's not just land for industry that happens to have rich biodiversity. There's two parts to this.
Yes, there's many moving parts to it, and right now our focus is obviously on saving what we can. Our CMP now have come in to enforce the injunction, so this past week has been pretty tense with us trying to prevent our CMP from evicting us from the area, and we have had industry go in and clear cut while we are still within range.
Mm. So you're saying cutting down trees while you're still in range of the trees, is that what you're saying?
One of our strategies has been to have tree sitters suspended in the trees themselves, high up on platforms, you know, some 60, 70 feet in the air, strung between the trees. And while the RCMP are busy trying to keep everybody out and trying to keep the media within the self-proclaimed exclusion zones, industry has come in and started clear-cutting trees to within 1 to 2 tree lengths of the sitters, putting their lives in danger. And actually WorkSafe BC finally came in and shut them down.
Good. I'm glad that they got shut down on their own terms.
Well, but it hasn't lasted long. They've been back at it again. So we have other strategies. We found western screech owls that are nesting in the area, and the provincial biologist has suggested and advised that Teal Jones stop their clear cutting. They have refused so far, and apparently there's nothing that can be done beyond that. It's a mere suggestion, apparently, from government.
Wow. So what's the situation like on scene now? You had mentioned today when we were kind of lining up a time to have this conversation that in the morning you'd be in the thick of it. What did you mean by that, and what are things looking like now?
Okay, so yesterday up at KQ's, there was a rather large gathering, an Indigenous-led movement that strolled through the RCMP blockade that was set some 8 kilometers away from our original KQ's camp.
Mm.
The RCMP have set up these blockades despite the injunctions. This is not an enforcement practice that is dictated in the enforcement order set up by the justice. This is something that they have set up arbitrarily. But because of the numbers, people were just able to swarm through the blockade and proceed down the road. And at some point, they reached the camp and proceeded to have a fire and a salmon dinner until the police came along again with paddy wagons and arrested, I believe, 13 of them.
Mm. So if I'm getting this right, your blockade is deeper towards the forest than the RCMP blockade. The RCMP has tried to, I guess, cut off access to your camp now in order to theoretically prevent resupply and more people power. Is that right?
I believe so. Yes, okay. That's right. Because they know that we will do whatever it takes to get back into the forest again. And right. We've proved that over the week, that no matter how many times they've cleared us out, we've been back again. And media have attempted to cover the story properly, as they should, but they've been restricted to police exclusion zones, which are an arbitrary zone that police have set up to ensure, actually, that the media is corralled and can't see anything.
Mm. So you mentioned 13 or so of the folks that breached the RCMP's blockade to get to your camp and provide reinforcement. You mentioned 13 or so of those folks were arrested. On what basis were they arrested?
They were arrested for, I guess, breaching the RCMP blockade.
Oh, jeez.
And the exclusion zone. And I believe that all of them have now been released, all without charge.
Okay.
So all is well with those people for the time being.
Okay. So is every camp, is there multiple camps, or is there a main camp, or is that not something you want to say? And you don't have to. Don't give any of your strategy away.
Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. I can say that our main camp is River Camp up at Ferry Creek. That was our original camp, and we still maintain that. We still hold that camp. So arrests have been made there recently. In fact, I believe over 40 arrests have been made now. Not all of them protesters. Some of them have actually been media who have breached the exclusion zone and people who have crossed the line somehow that police have just carted off in the paddy wagon.
Okay. And you haven't been arrested?
No, I haven't been arrested. There's certain of us that are core people, and, you know, I think at some point, you know, we'll go in and be arrested. But for now, we need people then to do the jobs that we do. We need people to do the media, to liaise and with the media and do broadcasts like this. So we need certain people in our strategic positions. But I imagine at some point we'll all of us will go down at some point and volunteer to be arrested.
So you would theoretically have to cross an RCMP exclusion zone yourself at this point to get back in?
Well, I wouldn't be allowed in an exclusion zone since I'm not media. So they wouldn't let me in. I'm not an official media person other than for RFS.
Yeah.
So for the Rainforest Flying Squad, so they're not about to let me in.
Mm. I see. And so in terms of getting to one of these camps, do you still have a way there if need be?
I believe we do.
Oh, okay. That's good. And are the camps self-sufficient?
Yes. We ask everybody who comes to ensure that they are self-sufficient, that they bring their own food, their water and firewood and their sleeping gear.
Right.
Yeah. So everybody is fully self-sufficient. And some people have lost their belongings when they get separated from them. So we're trying to work out how we can get that back. Teal Jones, the logging company, is responsible for picking up those things, apparently. So we'll have to find a way to get them back.
Hopefully they'll operate in good faith. I wonder.
I don't know.
So in terms of outcomes, what's your ideal outcome in this situation?
The ideal outcome would be for government, our NDP government, to come forward and abide by the commitment that they made during last year's election when they said that they would protect the old growth. This was one of their election promises. Mm-hmm. And so far we have seen nothing of any significance. We're now talking about their strategy as log and talk. They keep talking about it. They keep talking about it while the industry keeps logging. So that seems to be their strategy at the moment. And in fact, over this past year, they have approved 43% more old growth logging permits than they did the year before. So this is really quite egregious for what's supposed to be a socially minded government to fall flat on their election promise and disregard the social importance of the old growth to both Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a particular slap in the face considering they only theoretically got into power by having that promise as a part of their platform, because it's no secret how important the old growth forest and the forest in general is to residents of BC.
Oh, absolutely. I think there was a survey done not so long ago which indicated that 92% of British Columbians want the old growth saved. We have so little of it left.
Mm-hmm.
We need to keep what we have, and we're prepared to do what it takes to save what we have.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I had heard about the owl, endangered owl species in the news.
Yes, that's the Western screech owl.
And so that came from your movement.
Yes, it did, yes.
That's perfect.
And so we have had professional biologists in there to prove that and to listen for it and to identify it. It's not just us making this up.
Hmm. And so not that it necessarily matters now, but what did the BC Greens and the Liberals say about logging in their election promises, or do you remember?
Oh, absolutely. The BC Liberals had absolutely nothing to say about old growth logging. If they had a choice, they'd clear cut it all down too. They are really a resource extraction party, as are the NDP now. Certainly the BC Greens are doing what they can to demand a moratorium on old growth forests. So they are strong supporters, but unfortunately they don't have the power in the House anymore. They used to have the balance of power prior to the last election. And I think that's why Horgan called the last election, is because he was tired of having this balance of power and being responsible and accountable. And so now, with the promise of protecting the old growth, he won the election quite handily.
Hmm.
And now has decided that there's no point in abiding by his party's commitment.
I see. And so industry would still have logs to cut. They would still have trees to cut down, and there would still be logging happening. It's not that premium giant cedar trees that are worth $100,000, which is what they want. They want the crude oil, so to speak, instead of having to do, I guess, would it be harder work to get the second generation forest or the managed forests? And is that the problem here?
Well, the managed forests don't produce the quality wood that an old growth forest does. If you compare the quality, old growth wood is much harder, much more resistant, much stronger than the wood that they are artificially producing through tree plantations. They produce these tree plantations that are specifically made up of what they consider viable commercial timber, such as cedar and fir. Everything else they poison out.
Huh.
And they poison out, and as a result, they poison out all the wildlife and all the understory and all the berries and all the fungi and all the mycelium and all the underground networks that we now know exist in an old growth forest.
basically everything that makes it a forest worth having.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, a plantation forest is a really poor substitute for an old growth forest.
Right. And you know, the only reason I asked that was because I see the argument on the logger side, and particularly one of the ones I saw on the Rainforest Flying Squad Facebook, was this is my job, this is my career, and this is how I make my money. And I guess my thought was, like, gee, 3% of forests, ancient forests left, doesn't sound like there's a lot to go. Like, what are they going to do once that 3% is 0%? Aren't they going to have to find a different job or a different means of putting food on the table anyways? And isn't it like, how long does it take to get through 3% of forest? A year? 2 years? 3 years? Like, what's the timeline on looking for a new job here? You know?
Yeah, and exactly. Three biologists put out a professionally accredited work, a study that looked at old growth forest in the province and identified the number of hectares of high productive old growth forest left. And that's under 400,000 hectares now left within the province. 400,000 hectares out of 95 million hectares that comprise the forests of BC. So looking at how the clear-cutting harvests have been going over the last couple of years, I've calculated that we have 5 to 7 years left of old growth harvesting left. So yes, they will have to make a transition at some point, the loggers, and this is not something new. This is something that they've known since the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. The government has been doing old growth strategy reports since 1992. I have a copy of one of the very first reports. It's so old, it's not even electronically available. But they have a history of developing these strategies and then dumping them, I believe, at industry's request. So there will have to be a transition at some point for these loggers and for those associated industries, and yet they refuse to believe that there's so little left. They are quite insistent that there's enough to go on for hundreds of years yet, mm-hmm. which is not the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if someone wants to help, let's break this down for people in BC and then people outside BC. First of all, for people within BC, theoretically, who have been vaccinated, but maybe not necessarily, because things are urgent here. How can people in BC help?
Well, the number one thing is to come to Ferry Creek, come to KQ's, you know, come to the area. We have a headquarters set up that's easy to find, and they will direct you then to the place that you're needed most. And then you can go from there. So, I mean, the physical presence is the thing that we're wanting right now.
Right.
Another thing that you can do is just donate. You know, we have a GoFundMe that's available. And, you know, people have been very, very generous in supporting us over these last 10 months. We're into 10 months of this effort now. And we've been very fortunate that people do donate to us. We're not a charitable status society, so we can't give tax receipts, mm-hmm. But people are still willing to support the cause because they believe so deeply in it.
And people should. I think a tax receipt, you only get 30% of what you give anyways, so whatever. Mm-hmm. Just make a donation, people. And what's the link for that, for the GoFundMe? What's it called?
Oh, yeah, go to the Rainforest Flying Squad GoFundMe.
So they're on the GoFundMe website, and they'll type in Rainforest Flying Squad. Okay.
Just type in Rainforest Flying Squad GoFundMe, and you'll get there.
And so, if they're in BC, people are in BC, and they go to Ferry Creek, they're gonna see two people with RCMP uniforms and people without, and they'll go towards the people without the RCMP uniforms.
That's
I suppose.
Right. That's right. That's right. It's a shame, but we've really seen some egregious behavior by the RCMP in terms of, you know, sort of, you know, manhandling some of our people, threatening a tree sitter with tear gas and rubber bullets if she doesn't come out of the tree. And setting up these exclusion zones that are designed specifically to corral media and keep them away from the scene. So we're sort of finding ways around this. You know, as the days go on, we're finding strategies that and we're finding that the public is very appreciative of what we do. You know, we're very good at posting the latest news so that people can keep up with what's going on a regular basis. And people have so many good things to say about this, and they are incredibly supportive, and for that we thank them.
I completely agree. I mean, I personally want to take off work myself, and I'm telling you, I'm in Saskatchewan, so they'll have many questions to ask me on my way there, given the current restrictions.
Well, I think what's happened is that our movement has sparked many movements in BC by communities and individuals and organizations that want to protect the trees in their area. They're seeing what we've been able to do, a movement that has grown from a tiny group of hikers that originally decided that they needed to do something into this massive movement now that has just crossed the province and sparked so much interest and dedication and support. It's been amazing.
Good, and I hope it keeps going. So there's the GoFundMe. There is your Facebook page, which is Rainforest Flying Squad on Facebook. And on that page, I noticed multiple times a day, as you say, members will post messages for folks to either email or write a letter to the premier.
That's right.
And I encourage people to grab that, copy and paste that premier's email address and send him a letter of your own. You can either copy something that someone's written, or you can write something yourself is always good, but you don't need to be a BC resident to do this. You can be just a resident of Canada, and someone will have to read that on the other end, and someone
Absolutely. This is a national, this is a global issue, you know, in terms of climate change, especially, and the loss of biodiversity. I mean, we just can't afford to be acting like this. We've had many municipalities come forward with letters of support, which is really quite astounding, to tell you the truth. So the support is out there, and so we just have to keep leaning on government, leaning on industry, and what ultimately we want is a brand new model of forestry that is based on values and ethics and is developed in the public interest.
And so for people who are outside of BC, we've mentioned a couple of ways of supporting through the internet and writing the premier, sharing a podcast like this, and sharing specifically messages that you'll find on the Rainforest Flying Squad Facebook page onto your own Facebook, you know, copying and pasting, get a picture in there, just get people make people aware of what's happening in BC, because, you know, there is two steps. Part of it is awareness, and then part of it is actually doing something. And the more people that know this is happening, that know that in 7-8 years there may not be old growth forests in Canada, you know, to look at, to bring their kids to, that could do something for people. So I am going to encourage everyone to make this an issue this week, and do something if you can.
Yeah, there is another initiative that has just developed recently within the last few days, and that is a grassroots movement then to recall the government, and specifically the NDP MLAs then, who have broken their promise to the people of BC. So to recall them as MLAs.
So how does that work?
We have legislation that allows us a certain percentage of the population to have an MLA step down.
You mean BC has that or Canada has that?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I know BC, I believe BC has it.
Wow, that's fantastic. So that'll require the support of CBC News and some of the mainstream outlets, I would assume, because, you'll need more help with that. How do you organize something like that?
It's being organized by another separate organization altogether. It's not coming from within the Rainforest Flying Squad.
I see.
So, but we're certainly willing to support it. I happen to know a few thousand people who will be there.
Good.
So, so again, it's in its infancy stages, so we'll have to see how it goes. But I'm certainly supportive of that.
I hope that one of the opposing political parties, and I don't even care which at this point, throws their weight into that too.
Certainly the Green Party, I think, you know, this is their opportunity to gain some support, I think, from people who really see how egregious this whole thing is, and for some responsible people to join their ranks. The BC Liberals have sort of faded into the woodwork, and nobody really talks about them much anymore. They're not really a force of nature in BC at this point in time.
Okay.
So I think this is an opportunity for the Greens to step up and show what they're made of.
Good. I hope they do. Kathy, is there anything else you can share with us or that you want to share with us?
Just that, you know, if you go onto our social media and you see our messages and our postings, you know, support us and share and tell us what your experiences are and really show your love for the movement.
Perfect. And so I'll have a link to this podcast as well as a few of the Rainforest Flying Squad posts on my own Twitter. And so that's POTP Pod, at POTP Pod on Twitter. We also have Politics on the Prairies Facebook page. And like I said, I found this group and I found Kathy through the Rainforest Flying Squad Facebook page. And she's right, it's constantly updated. You can get pictures and see what the action on the ground looks like and figure out how to be involved that way. If there's nothing else, Kathy, I hope you have a good week this week, and I hope things are positive, and I hope we can get closer to the outcome that results in saving these ancient forests.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation to take part in this, Ryan. I really appreciate your interest and the opportunity to speak to you and your audience. I think this is something that has to go across Canada, and the more people that get involved and the more people that are aware of this, then the more successful we'll be.
Excellent. Thank you so much again, Kathy, and good luck.